This is Agri Futures on Air, brought to you by Agri Futures Australia, driving innovation in Australian agriculture.
Hello, I'm Jane Cudahy, and today we're delving deep into the issue of community trust in rural industries. At the centre of the conversation is a body of work undertaken to give insights into the drivers of community trust and acceptance for Australia's farmers, fishers and foresters. Kieran Moffat is CEO and co-founder of Viconic and the lead researcher of the project.
Our job was to build a survey instrument to then go and collect a national sample representative of the Australian population, effectively to bring the voice of average Australians into this conversation about social licence. Was really challenging. And so what that first survey instrument did was to really map out all of the interaction points that Australians have with rural industries, and to do that in a way that the questions we were then asking of community made sense to them, were able to tap into the concerns or the challenges or the things that they really value and like about rural industries, in real ways that could then be used effectively by rural industries to inform their practices. So, you know, there is a real process in taking those conversations that we're having with all these different diverse perspectives within rural industries and then creating a 20-minute survey effectively that allows us to explore all of that with average Australians who don't have that level of expertise around knowledge around how rural industries operate. So, but yeah, that was really interesting, challenging work and a real negotiation, in fact, with rural industry representatives to make sure that they were going to get what they needed, and we were going to ask those questions in a way that allowed us to get what we needed to deliver for rural industries.
Absolutely. So, 5,000 people responded in that first round of questionnaire, did they?
Yeah, just over 5,000 people participated. And that first year, it's really about benchmarking. So it's really getting a baseline of understanding. And then, you know, we do two things to that data. So the first thing is we want to understand what people think. So across, you know, whether that's issues around water, environment, welfare, actually around how community members value the economic contribution of rural industries, the relationship between rural industries and regional communities, you know, all of these things. We looked at trust in rural industries relative to other industries and institutions like government and, say, big retailers. We looked at the responsiveness of rural industries. We looked at how fairly people feel the benefits of rural industries are distributed back to community. All of these things, we want to really touch on all of those interaction points. And so in getting that baseline in the first year, our first task is to understand, well, just what do people think on that? So what are the average sentiment for different groups on those different topics? And then the second piece that we're really interested in is, how does that all fit together? Why do people feel that way? And we bring, you know, quite advanced statistical methods to bear to answer that question. And what we try and do there is model how it all fits together in people's heads. So we take that survey data, we do what we call a path analysis, which tells us that the way those ideas, those constructs, those issues all fit together for people and help us to explain what is it then that drives acceptance of rural industries, and in particular, given the name of the project, how trust in rural industries fits into that story as well.
What was the light bulb moment for you personally? Like, what was some of the response that was really interesting that you maybe didn't expect?
Well, you know, one thing that we hear a lot is that there's a city-country divide, say, and we hear that it's because where people live determines how they think, and that people that live in cities really don't understand agriculture, and that's a divide, real divide, that means that people in regional Australia, people who work in rural industries, you know, don't get a fair shake, you know, that their perspective isn't well understood. And And so that was one of the questions we had in year two is, well, can we kind of drill into that story a little bit more and tease that apart? And so we did. And what we did is ask two sets of questions. One was, where do you live? So we asked people to tell us where they lived around the country. We're collecting data from all states and territories across the country, from urban areas, from cities, from regional areas that don't have agriculture to regional areas that do. And then we also asked a series of questions about how many people you know in that work in rural industries. And what we found is that whilst there was a quite modest difference in terms of where people lived. So if you lived in city or an urban area, your views around rural industries in general were slightly less positive than people who lived in regional areas, and in particular those people who lived in regional areas that had rural industries operating within them. But actually, what was a much stronger effect in the data was whether you knew somebody who worked in an Australian rural industry. And so what we found was that if you knew at least one person who lived in an Australian rural industry, your attitudes towards rural industries were much more positive than people who didn't know anybody. And so what we can take from that, and the light bulb moment for me, is that that it's not about where you live, but where you live shaping your opportunities to build relationships with people in Australian rural industries. And it's those relationships that lead to deeper understanding and more positive and favourable views, not least because you're able to explore the concerns you have, to reduce the uncertainty that you have around how rural industry operates, how water is allocated, say, or environmental impacts are managed, because you don't have anyone to ask. It doesn't come up in conversation.
You lose its relevance. Like you find much more relevance when you can, you know, at least have someone to bounce some ideas off.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the light bulb moment for me in that wasn't so much defining. I think that's really interesting because what it tells us is we need to facilitate connection. And it's not like everybody who works in a rural industry lives in a regional area. In fact, there's a lot of people who work in rural industries who live in cities that service those industries. And one of the strategies out of this work could be and should be to help facilitate those people that live in cities to talk about their work, to help others understand the industries that they operate within. Because it's not the city-country divide that's the problem, it's the opportunity to build relationships with people who work in rural industries that's really the issue there. Mm. The light bulb moment for me, though, was that this was such a deeply held assumption, that this was such an accepted truism of the city-country divide. We hear it all the time from politicians, from people in rural industries, and was so accepted. And in fact, very quickly, we're able to show that assumption was actually fairly off the mark, that it wasn't what people thought it was. And actually, these industries, just like all the industries that we work with, are full of these assumptions. That work that we do, that we've been doing in this project, is helping to kind of challenge and expose to empirical light. And I think that's really what I find most interesting about this kind of work is bringing that kind of interest to bear on those assumptions.
What kind of level of trust is there, and how do we build on that?
Yeah, so I mean, first of all, why is trust so central? And the reason for that is that in that work that we did over a decade in lots of different countries and lots of different industries, we found that trust was really important in this social license equation, if you like. So when we do these path models where we're trying to connect and understand how everything fits together, what we find is trust sits really centrally in those models, that it kind of acts as a vehicle that translates community experiences and expectations of an industry into their level of acceptance of an industry, and acceptance being our sort of proxy measure for social license to operate. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that trust is just really central in this equation, that working on improving acceptance and avoiding rejection by a community is really all about building trust within an industry, and trust has some real utility here too. It's the room to breathe when things go wrong. You know, it's the benefit of the doubt when things get challenging, and it's also the room to innovate and try new things. Permission to fail, which is what innovation requires, means that you need to have a deep level of trust. So the first thing, of course, we do is to look at, is trust important in this equation for rural industries in Australia? And absolutely it is. It sits very centrally in that relationship with community. And in that first year of work, that baselining work, what we found is that trust in rural industries is really strong. It's really solid. It's well above the middle point of the scale, so it's in positive territory in the survey, and compares very favourably to trust in other industries where we operate. Also, trust in rural industries compares favourably to other institutions like government, state and federal, and to large food retailers, for example. So people do, have a deep level of trust and, in fact, acceptance of Australian rural industries. And rather than that being a moment to go, okay, well, we don't need to worry about this too much, we don't need to relax here, I mean, the first thing to point out is that because of that diversity within rural industries, the level of community trust in those different industries does vary. But also what we saw is in the data is that when one in rural industry does something that's counter to the expectations of community that really kind of rubs them the wrong way, that people generalize that to rural industries overall. So in fact, it's important that rural industries are thinking about the way that they manage trust as a collective effort, because the actions of one industry influences the views of community members about all rural industries. And things like environmental responsibility are seen to be sector level responsibilities, not industry level responsibilities, that this is something we all need to be thinking about, not just the industry that might be having a problem at a particular time. So, yeah, we found trust is strong, but this is a moment to double down and, in fact, use that capacity to continue to innovate, to use it as a platform, in fact, to progress challenging agendas within rural industry.
As Kieran mentioned, this is a far-reaching project with community trust at its core. But why is it so important that Australian consumers trust rural industries? Jen Midway is a senior manager with Rural Futures and a driving force behind the development and implementation of the research.
Trust is a really important factor. So at the moment, we're seeing a real trend towards the consumer, but also the community more at large, really want to have an understanding of where their product is produced, how it's produced, and importantly, to make sure that it sort of is it produced in alignment with what the community really expects of our producers when they're growing sheep, growing wheat, growing whatever it might be. So there's a real interest there. And it's really important from our perspective in terms of the ability to innovate and change and do different things. In terms of, if we don't have that sort of foundation of trust in terms of what we're doing, it makes it really difficult to try and do things differently or get questions from the community about, how sustainable we are or the ethics around how we produce things. And that can, and we've seen, lead to sort of some detrimental outcomes, for instance, around live export or in the case of cosh and their water use. We've seen the flip side of that, and it's really important for industry to get on top of that so that we align with where communities' heads are at, but equally that ensuring that we're doing the right thing, and we've got a really great story and narrative in ag to tell, so it's important that we do share what we are doing.
Okay, well, there's about 20,000 things that I want to ask you off the back of that particular statement, but we'll start with what AgriFutures have been doing around the Fishers, Farmers and Foresters project and the amount of community engagement you got out of that particular survey and project in the last 2 years is extraordinary.
Look, we've been so fortunate. It's a program that we sort of started about 3 years ago, and I have to absolutely acknowledge my RDC colleagues. We work with New South Wales DPI, we work with National Farmers Federation, and 11 of the 15 RDCs, so that's Rural Research and Development Corporations, in really, driving this program. It's been an absolute cracker in terms of getting the support and really at the grassroots. So we've had over 14,000 people complete a survey over 2 years, actually, I should mention. And that's been really instrumental in not just telling us how the community feel about agriculture, but actually tells us what are the drivers of their values, which is a really different concept. So it's not about whether they like us or not, or they, you know, feel like there's a feel-good factor there or whatever it might be. It's actually saying, what are the community's values around how we, you know, grow food and fibre in this country? And what are those values? And are they, is there alignment to how we're sort of doing that in Ag, Fish and Forest? It's a world first, I think, in terms of doing that in a cross-sectoral capacity. So there's lots of initiatives and activities that are happening at the grassroots, at the industry level, and by producers. So, you know, we're not trying to take away from any of that activity that's happening. But there is a bit of a sense that it's consistency in approach. It's, you know, not throwing one industry under a bus when something, you know, bad happens or whatever that might be. It's about getting a lens over the whole industry and what's happening more so than that the individual industry level. And that's what this project has been about. It's been about building the capacity of the sector to really, I guess, drive and change in terms of how we're responding and maintaining and building community trust, which is really important. And it's been a big game changer. I think we've engaged about 600 industry folks in the process. And, you know, we've been building a real momentum towards change. And one of the things I would point out is that the research has very clearly showed us that essentially what the community does not see us as wool, meat, cotton, dairy. What it does see us as is one big industry. And so basically, they don't care, or maybe they do care, but they don't know about the granularity. It's not as important to them. So, you know, when you see industries like, you know, potentially say dairy responding in a different way to cotton, to livestock and grains, for instance, they just seeing confusion. It just doesn't resonate well with the community. They don't see the differences across the ag and fish and forest industries. So it's really important, I guess, and this project has really driven, I guess, a cross-sectoral approach and really aligned then with the way that the community sees us.
So that is a massive undertaking, because I was going to ask about the challenges of consumers grouping all of those industries together, because not only do we as producers separate them as industries, but where there's like multi, you know, breed societies or, you know, individual vegetable groups as opposed to a horticultural industry. So that's, you know, that kind of change doesn't happen overnight. And certainly the communication between those bodies and groups of growers is massive. So taking that all on board, because when 14,000 respondents say something, I guess you've got to listen. How do you get around moving forward with those kind of changes?
Yeah, look, you're absolutely right. So one of the things that is, you know, complex is even within industries, even I'm a sheep producer, so even within sheep industry, there's, you know, a large number of different breeds and other things that and complexities in production systems that, you know, it's quite incredible actually when you break down the actual scope of the ag sector. And as you're rightly pointing out, I mean, then trying to lift that all up and get it to a sector level is somewhat challenging. But having said that, we've got a really great bunch of partners involved in the project that have really helped drive that. So they've really been instrumental in pulling together the people that are impactful in this space and asking some pretty tough questions around how we as a sector should move forward. So certainly there's lessons to be learned at the industry level, but really, I guess, the project and the program, I should say, is really about building consistency. But yeah, look, I don't want to take away from the fact it is a big undertaking, but, you know, it's one that the program has really started, and it's exciting to sort of see where it's landed after, you know, only a couple of years underway.
I guess you are going to have to break down into some projects to get the ball rolling on some of the concepts that have come out of the survey and the project. So what kind of projects have you started with?
So it was quite interesting, actually, that the first part was just, let's just get the survey, let's get the consistency of language, let's get the capacity building sort of momentum moving. And that was kind of like, okay, that's kind of the mark of success. If we can really do that, and I don't want to take away from how hard that actually is, as we've pointed out, the complexity of the system, the complexity of the production systems, you know, can't be underestimated. But what we did find was just, you know, the momentum that we built early on has really enabled us to grab some opportunities by the hand and really, I guess, start to think about how we can really shift the dial, not just as a capacity building element, but actually start to understand how we can make that change. So a couple of the things we've done is one is that we've started to really we called for volunteers, and we're really thrilled that, for instance, Cotton jumped on board in terms of saying that, yes, they would put their hand up. They would be willing to sort of go through a process, understand better around what some of their challenges were. I mean, they already had a really good handle on that, but get some consistency in the data, similar to what we've done with the other trust survey work. And then actually, like, we'd follow that through. So they'd make those changes on the back of it and then use that as an opportunity for peer-to-peer learning. What worked? What didn't? Why did that work for cotton? Would that work for other industries? And to really, I guess, analyze, you know, is this a strategy that others could put in place and successfully put in place? So we've done that with three or four other industries. So the most recent one is grains, and they're looking at ag chem and also, you know, some of the sort of more gene editing types of sort of side of it. So to really unpack, okay, what does the community feel about this? What strategies can we put in place to ensure that they do have trust in our systems? And what can we do next to kind of address that, I guess, or what levers can we implement or pull to make that change? The last thing that we've also done is some of the research has shown that there's some, I guess, grey areas. So grey areas kind of mean people, there's a big group in the middle that don't know if they trust something or not. So, you know, if there's examples where people really trust something or they really don't trust something, but there's a couple of issues that sort of sit in that big middle group where they really don't know, and they're very much open to voices in a positive sense in terms of understanding what industry is doing, but also some of those detractors that can be quite noisy. So basically what we're doing is also looking at how we can create a sort of consistent, well, you know, narrow it down to some of those specific issues and really, I guess, create consistency in how industries are going to deal with those. So not collective action. We're not going to, you know, all run off and do a big program in trying to achieve that. I think, you know, there's more opportunity to work with individual industries who have their stakeholders, have their communication channels, really arming them with information around what are a consistent set of levers that we can, you know, all pull in sort of unison. And it's up to industries which ones they do and don't take up. But if we do that in unison around particular issues like workforce, like some of our, you know, environmental stewardship type areas, that's really impactful. And that's been, you know, we're on the sort of cusp of starting that work, but already we've got some really strong momentum heading into that. So it will be exciting, I guess, to see where that lands.
Well, how does social license and our conversations around that marry with some of the concepts that you're talking about here with trust? Is it the same but different, or is it two different concepts?
No, they're definitely interlinked. So social license is sort of like, you know, I think there's a bit of a sense in industry that it's almost awkward language because we don't want a license necessary to operate. We're not asking community to please, you know, let us do what we need it to do. It's really around, I guess, a mutual sort of understanding of how we can, you know, we can deliver products and you know, produce products that are aligned with how consumers and producers and the community actually want us to do that. And I'll just give you a brief example from my experience is that, yes, sale yards were built in Yass, and that when we had a lot of stock trucks going to Carcor and other places around New South Wales, but they sort of ended up being funneled through our main street. I live in a small country town in regional New South Wales, and on the back of the growth of the Yass sale yards, there's a lot of trucks going up and down our main street. And, you know, I'm a fifth generation farmer. We've been here forever. It's a really, you know, agricultural producing town. And, you know, there were some people in town that didn't like the fact that trucks were going up and down with stock on them with the associated effluent and you know, seeing animals, you know, going in trucks. And so a good example of that, they actually tried to stop them going through the main street of town. So look, social license is a wide variety, and we're seeing it more at the producer level. I mean, that's a social license issue to an extent. It's also a trust issue. So if they really, really understand the fact that, you know, what is happening is, you know, they've done with the best practice and other things, and there was potentially less of a problem there. So, you know, we eventually got around it, but it was a practical example of how social license can really influence the fact that, you know, we turn off a large number of stock a year. What would we do if we couldn't drive through? There's not many other ways to get around a small country town.
That's right. We could build a whopping great bypass that wouldn't cost us $1 million, you know, more than $1 million, obviously, but it would certainly be more detrimental to a number of factors around town, surely.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a great example, though, of where, you know, trust sort of, you know, they're not one and the same, I don't think. I mean, I think there's a lot of connotations attached to social license, but certainly it's about doing the right thing, calling out those in the industry when, you know, things go wrong, and having a sort of consistent and sort of best practice approach, I guess, in terms of how to deal with issues. If and when, it's likely a when, because, you know, we're not always getting this stuff right. You know, the industry expectations definitely change. So it's really around making sure that, you know, we are, I guess, being responsive, because it is a moment where, you know, it's just not enough to say we're going to do it how we want to do it. You'll have to just, you know, work around that. That's just you know, the community is a big factor in this. They're wanting to know more. They're wanting to engage. Those days are gone. But also it creates opportunity. Let's think about how we can do this collectively, address some of these types of issues. And that's what this program really has been about, sort of answering that and creating a pathway, I guess, to do that.
So with your producer's hat firmly on, what surprised you the most out of the data that you collected? What was the one thing that you went, you know, went, oh, gosh, didn't expect that?
I definitely think that I was surprised. You know, 88% of people did trust the sector. So, you know, we're constantly being told, whether it's in the media or by our own assumptions, that we're not trusted or that there is a big problem, we're on a burning platform. And I think from my perspective, that was probably something that I was like, oh, hang on. Well, we can't rest on our laurels on this. We're actually, there is a really solid foundation to kind of build things. And of course, you know, that can be taken away as we've sort of seen in a number of instances we've sort of mentioned before. The other thing I think that, you know, from the, I sit here as a farmer, we've got, we're predominantly livestock, and I don't know a huge amount about some of the grains industry and others, but you know, I see ourselves as very different to the others, as in we've got different production systems. We've talked about the complexity in terms of even within livestock, there's a big difference. But surprisingly, they actually, you know, the community just doesn't see that. They just don't know about the difference between livestock producers to grains. They probably know at a, you know, intellectual level, but, you know, in terms of how they see us and whether they trust us or not, that just doesn't factor in. So I probably, you know, I think it opens up interesting opportunities there and also challenges, because we've always approached these things quite at an industry level, so and rightly so, but equally I think, you know, the opportunity exists to think about more about how we come across the community and how we then drive some of those opportunities, rather than, you know, wondering how cotton's dealing with something or dairy is doing something or grain. So, you know, that just isn't sort of how the community sees us, and I think we need to respond to that. In terms of some of the specific issues, there was actually an open section at the back of the survey, and issues like foreign investment, you know, that was one of the ones that just absolutely came to the fore in terms of, like, I felt like industry's really across some of these challenges. And, you know, I don't think this is a debate on foreign investment or not, but it was interesting that the community, who, you know, by their own sort of admission, don't know huge amounts about production systems, but knew about foreign investment and the sort of play of policy around that. So that was probably a bit of a surprise to me as well.
So we can now understand the parameters of the research and what surprised those asking the questions, but how can it be applied? The Australian egg industry can be considered a case study for some of the information that we've been talking about. Rowan McManus is the Managing Director of Australian Eggs, a research and development organisation encompassing most of Australia's major and minor egg producers.
Yes, well, it didn't start with the knowledge that we had issues with respect to community trust. I think at that time we felt we had issues in relation to the media because we were getting bad press. Almost all of that bad press related to the issue of caged eggs, which had played out for many years as a really controversial issue, of course, with, you know, people on each side having very, very strong views. It had gone on for over a decade. You know, it's sort of built and built for about 15 years up to around 2015-16. And I think as an industry, we all at that time had an interest in sitting back and saying, what is going on here? What are we doing? And is this the most productive way that we can progress this issue? Because we're going out there with facts and information, we're going into the media and we're sort of contesting points, and it's not working. All it seems to be leading to is lots and lots of negative media.
And did you feel, I will interrupt you just there. Did you feel like you were always then trying to defend, instead of going out with these great news stories that your industry could come up with? Did you find that, you know, it was that confrontive element a lot?
Yeah, absolutely, because we weren't the ones putting, you know, negative sort of content about our industry. That always was done by others, and it always did by others first. So, yes, there was a reactive element to the approach that the industry was taking at that time. And then if you wanted to, you don't want to be too open, but, you know, I think reactive and almost defensive at times. I think that the tone was not right across that period. And it led to, frankly, good media. You know, it led to media that heightened the issue and gave it a sense of sensationalism, made it a good media product. And that wasn't really good for the issue, and it certainly wasn't good for the industry, and it wasn't good for the members of the community that were genuinely interested in it. Nobody wants to become the latest media sideshow. You know, if there are important issues for the community, there needs to be a productive way to progress them. So that was where we found ourselves. What is the most productive way to progress this issue? And we did quite a bit of thinking and quite a bit of research, and we looked around at what others were doing and sought to learn from them. And through that, we stumbled across some work that had been done for many years in the mining sector predominantly, but actually in a range of industries as well, and it related to community trust. And we learnt. We sat down with people and said, right, okay, tell us what it is that you do. And they explained it in very simple terms and just said, look, you know, a community is not going to accept you unless it can trust you. In order to trust you, it needs to understand that it's being heard, and that you're progressing those issues that are of interest or concern to them. And when I saw that on a whiteboard for the first time, it just was like a snap or penny drop moment. I just went, I reckon that's right. And from that moment, we started working with those social science researchers, and they were at the CSIRO at the time, to unpack it and bring it into a process that worked well for our industry. Now, as we did that, we had to confront the fact that the process is not without risk. PR doesn't involve any risk. You just run around telling everyone how clever you are. No risk, or perhaps the risk is that it'll be horribly ineffective, as it often is. But the messages are very safe. Community trust inherently involves risk because you have to make yourself vulnerable if you want to be trusted. You have to put yourself out there. And that's what we had to consider, and we had to work really closely with industry to take them through the process, pros, cons, benefits, what it might involve, of moving in another direction and really trying to focus our energies and build a process around increasing community trust.
I just want to ask you, when you're working with industry, and you know this would go back to your growers and suppliers, when you floated that idea in some of these meetings about the consumers having issues with trust, what was the reaction from the growers and the suppliers? Was it sort of, were they kind of confronted, or did they sort of have a light bulb moment similar to yours?
It was a bit of both. There was definitely a confronting element because the whole thing was confronting. And you've got to remember, these are people that take enormous pride in the contribution they make to the Australian community. They put a staple food on the table, 17.2 million eggs every single day, healthy protein. So these people are trying to do good every day, and yet they're seeing themselves in the newspaper suggesting that they're not doing good, and that's confronting. So the whole issue was sensitive from an industry perspective there. But there's some wise old owls in our industry, many of them, most of them, I'd say, and we were able to have productive conversations around it. And the theme of those conversations is, yes, we want to go and tell people what the facts are, but are we having fun? Like, do we think it's working? And they got that pretty quickly, you know, that they understood that the processes up to that point weren't really working and that something else needed to be tried. From there, we went into the details of what a community trust-focused sustainability framework would look like. And while there was many conversations and we rolled over it multiple times, frankly, it happened relatively quickly. It was sort of about 3 to 6 months. We were able to work with everyone across the industry to ensure that they understood what we were getting into and to get their support for the process. And that buy-in was rock solid at the beginning, so it was almost ubiquitous. Everybody wanted to do it, and it's stayed rock solid ever since. And that's possibly because it's been a very successful process for our industry. So once you're in it and you can see the benefits, it's obviously easier to support. And while there's always risks, and there remains risks in any process where you make yourself vulnerable, those risks haven't been realised in any great degree. And ultimately, it's been a much more productive way to progress these issues, and very successful in progressing them, because we don't see that conjecture and that controversy in relation to our industry that we saw 4 or 5 years ago.
That's amazing. So how many producers would you represent or are involved in this process?
Well, it's a difficult question to answer because we, Australian Eggs is a levy system. So anyone that buys a chook through the hatcheries ends up contributing to the levy. So there could be many, many, many thousands. Anyone with a backyard chook could be considered a levy payer. However, we have only 90 members out of all of that. and we have relationships with and correspond and provide content to about 300 egg farming businesses. So they're really the commercial part of the industry. And when I say commercial, I mean those that are using farming eggs for their primary source of income, as against, you know, a mixed farming business or a small or micro commercial business.
Well, that's amazing considering how many eggs are consumed every day. So you'd be able to have some really valuable relationships with those growers.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, our industry tracks other agricultural industries with, you know, standard sort of distribution, a small number of very large players, and then quite a few mediums, and then a very, very large number of small players. But within that, you are able to have really good relationships with, we'll call it maybe the top 30 or 40 egg farmers by size, and you're talking to the greater part of the industry. And that was part of the process. You know, we got people in the room and we're able to talk together. And a lot of these people have one, two, three generations and a whole lot of their wealth and capital and their future vested in the industry. And we're able to have real conversations about which way they wanted to take it and what they thought the best way, you know, was to protect their businesses, as well as not just protecting businesses and, you know, makes it part of making money, which is always part of business, but also restoring balance, you know, to the process and restoring that pride that egg farmers have in what they do, because they were never going to get there having the same conversation full of controversy, et cetera.
Well, that's right. When you're defending all the time and not able to sort of have those promotional or good news stories break through, that becomes really frustrating. I just, you know, we did focus a fair bit on the media side of why you sort of entered into this. But have you seen any other benefits to come out of it in terms of community trust?
Yeah, I think we've seen enormous benefits. So just the quick history of the matter is that it was vastly more successful in the first year in 2018 than we would have anticipated, including because the media had seemed so negative. So we had a community trust rating of about 56% at that time, and we didn't anticipate it would be that high. So it showed that beyond the noise, there was a lot of community support for our industry. And then over the years, we've actually grown that level of community trust. I think it was up to 60 the next year, then 64. Last year, it was 65. And, of course, we're very pleased and very proud of that process. And, of course, there's a lot of pride in the industry and what they do. The problem might have been media, but in the end, all industries need to find a way to engage effectively with the community. And that's been the ultimate benefit of the process. And it's quite challenging. The community's all out there. There's many of them. It's very hard to go and have personal relationships with all of them. And they're feeling vulnerable because they don't know necessarily where their food comes from, but they're getting increasingly interested in where their food comes from. And that gap needs to be filled. And it stands to reason that if you don't fill it, someone else will fill it. And it may or may not have, you know, accurate information or balance. So finding a mechanism which was genuine and independent and, you know, used third parties with credibility to capture the perspectives of the community that you could then rely on, make available publicly for all to see, and then work with as an industry has been, you know, very, very effective, very, very rewarding. But another really significant benefit of that has been the work we've been able to do with industry. And we're now in a position where the industry is rewarded for taking advancements, really, for improvement. So instead of talking about the same thing, you know, one particular negative, you're actually talking about everything. And as we make improvements on important issues to the community, environment and welfare and nutrition, well, we get brownie points for that, don't we? We get the recognition, and that encourages investment and interest by the egg industry in making further improvements. So it becomes a virtuous cycle. And previously, those improvements weren't getting any attention at all. And of course, if you don't reward, you don't get. So I think it's really assisted our industry in becoming more progressive and more open to change and open to improvements. Probably accelerated change is one way to put it, for the better. Mm. And I really couldn't have done that as an industry peak leader without a process of this nature, you know, without going out and pursuing community trust. You couldn't just tell people, go and spend money, make your farm better. Trust me, the community thinks it's important. it's about unpacking all of these issues and understanding what the drivers are. Next thing you know, every egg farming business wants to be a part of it and sees themselves as positioning themselves for success in the medium to long term.
Exactly. No, that's a very good point. And do you think, you started this process in 2018. Since that, time, we've seen changes in the way people engage with social media and media itself, and of course COVID, which has brought out all sorts of renewed interest in where your food comes from and all of that sort of thing. Have you seen a change even in that amount of time with how people and your producers engage with their consumers, whether that be, a social media site or an Instagram page that you can directly talk to your consumers as opposed to relying on that mainstream media all of the time?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's been a very interesting 15 years post 2007 iPhone invention and the creation of open access to information. And I think it is fair to say that everyone right across the economy handled the first 5 years really pretty poorly or were very flat-footed. So social media gave ubiquitous access to information, including incorrect information, to the community, and all of a sudden they're being bombarded with, this is what industry does, etc. And of course some of it was true, but a lot of it wasn't. And industry sat there with all of their wonderful 1990s comms learnings and thought, well, we know what to do here. And they put out PR. They said, we're really great. And it just didn't work. Mm. What we've seen in recent years, certainly the last 5 to 7 years, is just this explosion of sustainability frameworks by industries across agriculture, right across the economy, showing not just greater interest, but I think a genuine interest in sustainability issues that are of importance to the community. And what those processes give you is an ongoing dialogue with the community about what you're all about, what your values are, and what you're doing, and how you're progressing, and of course how you're listening, and incorporating those improvements that the community want to see. So that's the great difference between the past, I think, which was more reactive, 1990s comms, crisis management style of communications. And currently we see industry, including the egg industry, looking to fill a vacuum by having quality, genuine community engagement processes in place on an ongoing basis. Mm. And they can only be quality and genuine, et cetera, when they're two-sided, when you're actually listening and being prepared to hear things that aren't necessarily what you want to hear. So you're prepared to hear about problems and talk about problems, not just talk about all the good stuff. And, of course, you've got a process built on the end of that where you're prepared to do something about it. And what we found was that, funnily enough, the media makes everything seem really extreme. And people get outraged, a lot of outrage, right?
Yes, yep.
And when people are outraged, they're not particularly reasonable. So it seemed all very unreasonable. And you could get frustrated and think, the community is unreasonable. Well, what I think has been shown and what we've experienced in pursuing a community trust process is that actually the community is very reasonable. If they don't actually expect you to change overnight, if you're demonstrating that you're genuinely listening, that you're genuinely transparent, and that you are doing your best, making an effort, and demonstrating results in terms of improvement, they'll actually give you time, They'll actually take comfort from the fact that you're working on it, if you like,
yeah,
and that you are committed to improvement. And as I say, you're actually showing some actual outputs from time to time. Yeah. You can't just be talking about it all the time. You need demonstrated improvement. And, instead of saying, well, we want it all and we want it yesterday, the community appears to take the view that that is the right process. You've got to be working on these things, and then there'll be a little more understanding that they can't have it all and they can't have it today, that we need to work towards positive change, and positive change is going to take time. And I think that's been a huge insight and benefit of the process. Genuine engagement, all of a sudden people are actually reasonable. And you've got time to plan and make improvements, including on your egg farm, knowing that it will have a benefit, that it will meet the expectations of the community, which is the ultimate goal of our process.
Thanks for listening. Just as a recap, we heard from lead researcher Kieran Moffat, Rural Futures Manager Jen Medway, and Rowan McManies from Australian Eggs. For more information on anything you've heard today, please visit the AgriFutures website.
You've been listening to AgriFutures On Air, a podcast brought to you by AgriFutures Australia. For full access to a huge backlog of stories on Australia's agricultural trends and innovations, research outcomes, inspiring stories from our rural leaders, and insights into new and emerging rural industries, please subscribe to AgriFutures On Air on your favourite podcasting app. You can also find more information at our website, agrifutures.com.au.